Clerk, call the roll, please.
Ammons. Anderson. Beckett.
Here.
Binzel.
Here.
Betts. Carter.
Here.
Cowart. Dinitz.
Here.
Gladney.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Knott.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Mosier. Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales. Sapp. Schrader. Schmucker.
Here.
Weibel. Wysocki.
Here. We do have a quorum. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the county board resolutions and meet as a committee in the hall. Motion by Mr. Kurtz.
Second.
Second by Mr. James. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. I need a motion to approve the minutes of February 4th, 2010. So moved by Mr. O'Connor.
Second.
Second by Mr. James. Is there any discussion in the minutes?
I have a series of small.
Please use your microphone.
I have a series of small typographical errors that I'm going to correct. Can I just give them to
yes, the if you would please give them to the secretary for that purpose. Please note that Ms. Anderson has arrived, Mr. Schrader, and Mr. I need a motion to approve the agenda for the evening. Motion by Mr. O'Connor, second by Mr. Kurtz. We have a couple of changes to make. Each one of the three committees has an item to review the closed session minutes. Under highway, it's 8C. Under facilities, it's D1, or 9D. And under FEMA, it is H1. We're going to postpone those in light of the fact that there have been some changes to the FOIA regulations, and we want to make sure that our review of these meetings is consistent with the FOIA changes. Also, under environment and land use, we are also going to remove item 10B. Roman numeral XB. Are there any other changes? Okay. All those in favor of the agenda, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public participation. Tonight I'm going to impose the 5-minute rule, which is what I should have done last night. Didn't do any time, didn't think of any time, so we'll do it this evening.
And you can be correct.
Yes. Do you want to?
No.
Okay. okay. Virginia Ziegler.
Good evening. My name is Virginia Ziegler, and I live at 4704 North Gold Road in Urbana. A couple of weeks ago, you heard from my husband, Bill. He spoke to you about our 150-year-old Century Farm, about our grandson, Jake, who would like and dreams about being our sixth-generation Sidler farmer. Today, I'm not going to talk to you about our farmstead, or about even Jake wanting to farm, but instead I'm going to talk to you about public opinion. As all of you know, 18 representatives from the Regional Planning Commission, the Chamber of Congress, the EDC, Champaign-Urbana, and some from this board are in Washington this week lobbying federal officers for funds for the Olympian Drive project. Those officials represent special interest, not the people. The people are speaking out against Olympian Drive, and they're speaking loud and clear from right here in your districts. For the last week, an albeit non-scientific online poll has been conducted by WDWS asking for public input on the Olympian Drive project. When the poll closed today, there were 1,632 residents voted, with the poll showing a 3-1 against the Olympian Drive project. That's 3-1 against. The people are speaking, and they are speaking from right here in your districts, not on high-priced junkets to Washington. The people of our community, your constituents, do not support the Olympian Drive project, and their disapproval is coming through loud and clear. 73% said no to this Olympian Road project. I urge you to listen to your constituents and vote no on this Olympian Road. I thank you for your time.
Hello, my name is Jed Gertis. I reside at 1448 County Road, 2700 East Ogden, Illinois, Route 49. Just wanted to bring something to your attention. This thing on the waiver, on the wind farms, having everything subject to waiver at the time of special permit use. Seems like a little silly idea to me. I think a lot of you put in a lot of hard time on making this ordinance as good as it is, and having all the rules up for grabs at the time the ball game goes down seems a little mysterious to me, because most of them are safety-related issues, and this is safe for this person, but this person over here, well, they're kind of in the way, and we won't have to bother with safety for them. I think it could cause a lot of arguments and a lot of bad feelings between people when something isn't decisive right up front. Kind of like having a basketball game, going to a basketball game and saying, well, all the rules are up for grabs as soon as the tip-off. I think it could cause a lot of problems in the future, and I just think the county worked hard and that they passed a good ordinance, and the rules, they should stick with it and not have everything subject to waiver and up for discussion, because we're talking about people's safety, and the people granting the waivers aren't necessarily the people that are affected by the waivers or have to deal with the consequences of the waivers. Thank you very much.
Yes, my name is Herb Schultz. As you may recall, I'm chairman of the Newcomb Township Plan Commission. However, I'm not speaking in that capacity tonight. I'm speaking strictly for myself. I strongly recommend that you do not adopt case 658-1809, Part B. I also strongly recommend that you do not approve John Hall's request to amend subsection 6.1 as proposed in the February 22nd memo, that is item 10E1 on your agenda. The intended effect of 658-1809, Part B, combined with the proposed change to subsection 6.1, is to make all of the standard conditions for wind farms subject to waiver. This would be a mistake. As I explained at the previous meeting, the zoning code is clear on this point. The rules governing wind farms are not currently subject to waiver. As such, the zoning code reflects the clear expectation that most of us had when the wind farm amendment was being crafted, that it defines rules, not guidelines, that it defines regulations, they're not suggestions. Look, these rules deal with important things, such as setbacks, turbine height, noise, damage to farmland, electromagnetic interference, impact on wildlife, decommissioning, site reclamation, liability, shadow flicker. I mean, the list goes on. Now look, if these rules were intended to be waived, then why did the county spend so much time, effort, and money on them? Making the regulation subject to waiver simply puts it all for grabs again. It just throws it up in the air. Perhaps more importantly, why should the wind farm rules be subject to waiver in the first place? Remember, the wind farm regulations are designed to provide at least a baseline of protection for the residents of the county. They also set expectations about where a wind farm can or cannot be located. These are minimum standards. I must emphasize, minimum standards. And they should not be subject to waiver. They should not be subject to waiver. And as the zoning code is currently written, they are not subject to waiver. This is as it should be. Therefore, no changes to the zoning code in this regard should be undertaken. At the previous meeting, Mr. Hall indicated that he would re-advertise case 658 AT09 Part B. Now, I would recommend that it be dropped altogether, and that the suggested changes to subsection 6.1 not be made. One last point. The changes proposed by Mr. Hall will affect parts of the ordinance beyond the wind farm provisions. Make no mistake about that. It represents a significant change to the zoning code, and many of its consequences may be unintended. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Brad Eukin. I'm a manager of the Champaign County Farm Bureau, and tonight I'd like to speak to you on behalf of the organization. Before you this evening is the county's land resource management plan, and I'd like to share a few of our thoughts on the plan. While the organization does not have views on all of the plan or the plan as an entirety, there are several points within the document that I do want to speak towards tonight. First of all, it's no secret, obviously, the Farm Bureau is supportive of the one per 40 or one new lot allowed per 40 acres up to a total of four new lots proposed policy. This policy has been a long time policy within our own organization. In fact, in 2001 is when we first implemented this on our side of things. We believe it's a guiding principle. We believe this guiding principle has the ability to help ensure the sustainability of agriculture both now and in the future. However, it is often cited that this type of policy will not allow individuals to sell or develop any additional parcels in the county, thus limiting private property rights of landowners. Unfortunately, through a study completed in 2005 by the county titled Theoretical Potential Lots by right under different regulations, throws a lot of cold water on that claim. The study estimated that between 19,400 and 23,000 new small lots are still able to be developed in Champaign County under a 1 per 40 acre scenarios. That was again the results of your own study. There's several other points I want to touch on again more briefly. Secondly, there's a policy that calls for establishing a maximum lot size for new development. Again, this type of policy will help with limiting the amount of farmland lost in the county, but also continues to allow the individual to build a house so it's not totally removing any right that they may have. Next, the plan calls for, plan references the county examining the use of tools for farmland preservation. Numerous types available, such as ag areas, conservation easements, PACE programs. These tools combined would have an impact and would allow the county to pick and choose from a toolbox of methods to preserve farmland in the county. Finally, the document addresses our fundamental position that if development does need to occur, it should be compact, contiguous, and infill development should be a priority. Again, policies like this added together will have an impact and help ensure that farming plays a role in the future of this county. In closing, we commend the efforts of the committee that put together the report. and their diligent work in doing it. We hope that you as a board see the value of their work and support the points I've outlined this evening. Thank you.
And that's all I have for public participation. You've all done very well. Are you staying within the limits? Communications from the board? Mr. Bruce?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last week, I attended in Peoria the Siting, Zoning, and Taxing Wind Farms Conference. I spent a day interacting with many officials and public officials from many counties and learned much about what would happen in the state coming to us in 2010 and 2011. The Siting, Zoning, and Taxing Wind Farm Conference is a vision and goals for wind energy and renewable energy here in the state of Illinois, but also particularly here in Champaign County. Many of the agenda was based on the taxing of wind farms, the roads and decommissioning, property value guarantees, and responsibilities and best practices of county boards and zoning boards. I was able to interact with many of the developers who will be developing wind farms here in Champaign County. I sat over lunch with the Inver Energy representatives, Horizon and Midwest Energy representatives, who are all telling me that they are moving forward with applications here in Champaign County for wind farms starting in the fall and working through next year. Now, I also met and was pretty excited to announce for the first time Mr. Ben Hatch. Mr. Ben Hatch is the senior business developer for Iberdrola. Iberdrola is the world's largest wind turbine developer. They have under contract right now over 10,000 megawatts of active wind turbines in the world. Mr. Heck, for the first time, allowed me to make this announcement for publication. Iberdrola will be placing a large 300-megawatt project in the Champaign County, Ford County area starting next year. Right now, they're in negotiations, and it looks like this could add another additional 300 to 400 jobs in Champaign County on top of the other 600 that may well be hired due to the other wind developers. I just wanted to make that announcement. I think that's an exciting prospect and revenue. I also talked with the chair of the Livingston County Board, who told me that last year, Livingston County cleared nearly $2 million in new revenues based on their wind turbine revenue capture. Thank you.
Okay. Any others? Okay. We'll move on to Highway and Transportation.
Item 1, resolution for award of contract for verifying signposts. This is a resolution to award a bid for a project that we've been working on for a little over a year now to replace all of the official signs in the county, not only on the county roads, but the township roads, as well as the small municipalities around the county. We went out and did a sign inventory across the county. Were awarded a federal grant in order to replace those signs due to the fact that the manual uniform traffic control devices in its latest update has mandated that all signs be retroreflective at night and meet a certain minimum retroreflectivity to be driven around in the county. And I know you would know that there are many signs out there that don't meet the standards. When the headlights hit them, they don't reflect very well. So we did an inventory of all the deficient signs in the county, put together a bid package that went out for bids. The bids were opened on February the 22nd of 2010 for all of the various signs and signposts. The engineer's estimate was $298,369. We had two bidders. The low bidder was Allied Municipal Supply. They are out of Taylorville, Illinois. Their low bid was $261,930.86. And I would ask for your approval of that resolution for award that bid.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, it's open for discussion. Brian?
Jeff, just a quick question. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember when we were having discussions about that when I was going to talk one time about what we signed a job. Did we end up doing that, or?
We have an area in our shop that is its own separate room, I guess you'd call it, where we can store signs. We haven't moved ahead, and I don't believe that we will move ahead with actually purchasing a computer automated graphic design software to make signs, due to the fact that the majority of the signs that we have in the county are standard signs, and you can purchase those much cheaper from a person like this who makes the signs every single day versus making them ourselves. So that room is used for storage of all the signs. You know, we do make some signs with our own letters and stuff, but we're not going to buy the fancy sign making sign and make all of our own signs. It's just not it's cost prohibitive.
Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
The next resolution is appropriating motor fuel tax funds for salary and estimated expenses with the county engineer. As you may or may not know, probably don't know if you aren't on the highway committee over the last number of years, that my salary is paid directly out of the motor fuel tax funds. It doesn't come from county highway fund, doesn't come from tax revenues in the county, and actually 50% of my salary is reimbursed back through a federal participation back to the motor fuel tax funds as well. So this is a resolution appropriating money for December 1 of 2009 through November 30th of 2010 motor fuel tax funds to pay that salary. And I would ask for your approval.
Second.
We move to second. Open for discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Next item on the agenda, resolution appropriating $500,000 from the county motor fuel tax funds for the county share of the Monticello Road Improvement Job from U.S. Route 45 over to County Highway 19. This is a project that was bid back in November of 2009. It is a federal aid project that was bid by the Illinois Department of Transportation. The low bidder was Cross Construction. They were awarded the contract on December the 2nd of 2009. It does have a completion date of October the 29th of 2010, so it will be built this spring and summer. The low bid was about $2,300,000. We have a grant through the stimulus program of $597,000, another grant through the Highway Safety Improvement Program for about $1,250,000. So that leaves us a gap of right around $500,000 that we need to fund for our motor fuel tax funds. So we're bringing this resolution to you to be able to fill that gap with the motor fuel tax funds.
What you said, I'm going to talk for discussion. Steve?
Is this $500,000 the same amount that you told us we were going to have to put in when we reviewed this project when we used to meet by ourselves?
Yeah, actually, it's less than the money. Because of the stimulus money came in, another $500,000. We thought we were going to put revenue into it. So the stimulus came around and got another $500,000 from that. So it's half of what we thought we were going to put in the project. So it was approved originally just based on the highway safety improvement grant.
Thank you. Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Next item on the agenda is appropriating money for the remainder of the project on the Monticello Road job. This would be from County Highway 19 westerly over to the Piatt County line. So between resolutions 3 and 4, we will be rebuilding and widening Monticello Road all the way from US 45 over to the Piatt County line, which is an 11-mile project, which is a very large project. We don't usually undertake an 11-mile total rebuild project or widening project, but due to the fact that we received the safety money and obviously this road had a lot of traffic and there have been deaths on this road, unfortunately, we felt it was a very good use of the motor fuel tax funds. This piece is 6 miles long. We do not have any of the grant monies or the stimulus monies in this project. The engineer's estimate is a little over $3 million for this project, and we are asking to appropriate $3 million from the County Motor Fuel Tax Funds to build the remainder of Monticello Road. This project is also coming up on the on item number 5 as well.
Move approval.
Second.
Second. It's open up for discussion.
If I'm hearing you correctly, though, Steph, are we buying it all here? Is that right?
Yes.
We're not getting any help from the state or anything.
That's right.
Is that something that we should worry about?
No. I mean, this was in, and we're going to come back in about a month, hopefully, with our payment management program and do another deal on that for the people who haven't seen it before. But this has been in our payment management program. This has been in our 5-year plan. For some time. We were hoping that there would be some additional monies. Actually, that's why we didn't bid this project at the same time we did the first phase. We were hoping that maybe somebody would use all this stimulus money and Champaign County would be the recipient of that or something like that might have fallen through the cracks. But we had this motor fuel tax money set aside. It's in the budget for 2010. But we anticipated the extended cost for this project. We were just hoping to get some help from someone and get received.
Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
So item 5 is a follow-up to item 4. Like I talked about in my previous conversation, we were hoping that additional funds would become available for this piece of Monticello Road. Unfortunately, they didn't. We have secured all of the construction easements for this summer for this project. So we obviously need to go this summer, so I'll have to go out and renegotiate all of those construction easements. And in order to be timely in bidding this project, we would like to bid the project on March the 17th. And the resolution before you is granting the county engineer, or me, Jeff Blue, the ability to accept the low bid for construction on Monticello Road on behalf of the county as long as the bid is within 10% of the engineer's estimate. Also keep in mind that bid is on March the 17th. We do have a county board meeting on March the 18th, so if something were to go awry, hopefully we can deal with it at the county board meeting at that time. But this is a resolution, and we've done this a lot in the past when we have a bid that is not going to be awarded in time to get directly to the county board. because we've always, the state's rule of thumb is always 10%. Within 10% of the engineer's estimate is an awardable contract. So I would ask that you grant me that resolution to award that contract.
Second.
Second.
Any further
discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
That's all that I have there.
The next thing I'm intending to do with them is to send my see if we deferred until April meeting. The chair doesn't have a report. Next thing I'm intending would be designation of items to be placed on the consent agenda. And 8B, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 will be placed on the consent agenda.
Good evening. First item on the agenda is information regarding the updated project schedule for the chiller replacement at the downtown correctional center, page 26 of your agenda. Any questions? I'll entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved.
Okay. We got those. Okay. Discussion. Questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. A2, approval of the installation contract approval for a notice to proceed for successful bidder. Where are we?
We do not have a document for approval. Yesterday afternoon, we had a bid opening for the installation of the chiller project. Bids were apparently in line with our original budget estimate, but there was a disparity about the problem with the existing chiller, with the recovery of the existing refrigerant and or contaminated water that's in it. Because of the disparity, we decided to take a serious look at it, and we contacted this morning a hazardous waste material disposal company to take samples and send it off for testing to determine the chlorine levels that are left in the existing chiller. That will make a big difference on whether we have to, on the way we have to dispose of it. The removal was originally in the bid project, and even though the base bid for the installation of the new chiller were right in line, they weren't even across the board between the contractors when they bid it for the removal. So we're trying to make sure that we know exactly what we need to do and make sure that all bidders are aware of exactly what is required this time. Hopefully we'll have this information by the end of this week, and we will be willing to and ready to make a recommendation at the board on the 18th.
Questions for Mr. Reinhart? Hearing none. Courthouse exterior, masonry project, clock and bell tower restoration project. There's a project update sheet. Entertain a motion to receive and place on file. Moved by Mr. Bentzel, second by Mr. Rosales. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Facility director reports. Mr. Reiner.
Item one is the plant monthly reports. This state there is nothing unusual out of place at this time. Any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Entertain a motion to receive and place on file. Moved by James, second by Kurtz. Any questions, Mr. Reinhart? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Courthouse parking lot page station update. How's the one arm bandit coming?
It has been purchased and will be delivered this week. With software updates immediately following, it will be online and installed and online in a matter of weeks.
All right. State of Illinois DCO energy grant update.
We have received a energy grant. We have received a energy grant to DCEO for an amount of $8,673.20 for the deramping of and the installation of motion sensors for the courthouse addition. And right now we are currently getting proposals for the devices we need to install, which we will have to be completed by mid-summer to receive our grant funding.
Any questions about that grant? Mr. Sparker.
What do you estimate the cost of that project? The grant is only about $8,000?
That is correct. Our original estimate was for the cost of the motion sensing equipment itself, whether it be timer wall switches or motion detectors or multiple devices, was about $12,000. We're hoping that with the bidding process we can do a little bit better than that.
Any other comments, questions? All right. Chamber of Commerce Energy Purchasing Property Information.
The Chamber of Commerce and our cooperatives that we're involved in, we had reached a new three-year agreement for the purchase of electricity. On this page 32, on the upper portion of the document, I pulled this is a section of part of the cost per kilowatt square foot document to show a comparison of currently what we've been paying to what the new three-year contract will be. Starting in meter read date on June 2003. So we're going to get a better price for electricity for the next 3 years than what we had been currently paying. It will greatly help us prepare our annual budgets for the next few years. We are still waiting to hear and expect to hear within the next couple of weeks about the gas cooperative agreement. So far, we have not had an exact number, but I've been promised that we should have the information coming in just a matter of weeks also.
Any questions or comments about the cooperative agreements? Hearing none. We're skipping semi-annual review of closed session minutes to next month. There are two closed session minutes that are passing, that have been passed around. Has everybody had a chance to see them yet? Ms. Cohort, we have them now. Are we ready to act on that? I'll entertain a motion to approve those closed session minutes.
So moved.
Mr. James. Second by Mr. Gladdy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair's report, of course, you know that we got the arbitration award of $405,000. Mr. James and I have talked and believe that it would be a good idea to break down the total cost of that project, including the arbitration, and I've been working with Ms. Busey to try to get those numbers together. As soon as I have them, we'll get them out to everybody so we can see from beginning to end how much money we had in it and what we spent the money for, and certainly hope to have that by the county board meeting for you. I see no action items for regular agenda. Facilities is over.
Transportation coordination process. And there are, at your desk, two handouts relative to her presentation. They're both black on white, as is everything else at your desk.
I just want to say that arrow down.
So, Rita, I'm going to let you take it away and tell us what you brought us to know.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Rita Black. I'm the Planning and Community Development Director for RPC and also a Transportation Planning Manager for RPC. If you remember, in 2007, I was here because the county received a letter from IDOT notifying the county that there was money available to apply for a grant and receive that money to provide transportation to the residents of Champaign County, including the rural areas. At that time, the amount of money was $448,000 approximately, and there was a decision of the county board in October of 2007 to proceed with the request for the grant. But as part of doing that, there was a requirement from IDOT to follow a process through the Interagency Coordinating Committee on Transportation. This is called the ICPT primer. Today, we are here to provide an update on that process. That process started around June of 2008, and Nicole George, she's a transportation planner in RPC, has been the person leading this effort. Then we'll provide an update on what has been done so far and where we are today and what are the next steps. And then at the end of the presentation, feel free to ask us any questions. Nicole?
Okay. All right. The process consists of five phases. The first phase is the transit partnership group getting stakeholders together to get them together so they can talk about transportation issues. Phase two focuses on needs and resources, utilizing three survey components. Phase three is the action phase, where we take the information collected and have identified a lead agency to provide the service and identifying the types of service and contracts and potential funding sources. Phase four is applying for the actual 5311 program and getting contracts in order. And phase five is evaluation. This is a map of the state of Illinois from the ICCT clearinghouse. If you see, it's kind of hard to see some of the colors. Those in blue are counties that have rural public transportation funding, this 5311 program. If they are in a brownish color, there's a few of them, they have both urban and rural public transportation funding. And if they are orange or slightly gold, they don't have rural public transportation. If they're orange, they only have it in an urbanized area. As you can see, we are orange. However, we do have a green bubble around our name, which means we have participated in the process and are in phase three. Other counties with bubbles are also ones participating in the process currently. Our first meeting was in June 2008, and we established a transit partnership group through a variety of stakeholders, including transportation, human service agencies, medical, healthcare, educational, employment and job training, government, and other stakeholders. It's kind of hard to see if you guys are there. This is a list of our stakeholders. We've had a variety of transportation providers, human service agencies, and other agencies concerned with getting people to and from work, medical appointments, and day-to-day life activities. We started our survey process in August of 2008 and finished in July of 2009. There were a total of 884 surveys received, and our three top rural locations for receiving surveys were from Rantoul, St. Joe, and Thomasboro. 14.4% of respondents said that they do not have access to a vehicle that is running or licensed or insured. And 29.8% of respondents said that there are trips they can't make because of lacking transportation. And those trips that they most often miss are the top three, as medical, shopping, and work. 72.4% of respondents said that they would use public transportation that was available, and the locations that they want to go are Champaign, Urbana, and Rantoul. 10.3 said they need medical transportation outside of the county, and those locations being Springfield, Danville, and Chicago. We also surveyed agencies. 34 agencies responded, and 94.1% of them said that there are unmet transportation needs. And those needs are for medical inside the county, social service appointments, and shopping. 52.9% said that the clients need medical transportation outside the county, and those are to Chicago, Danville, and St. Louis for the top three that they offered. Phase three began in August of 2009, and as part of this group, this phase, we broke our transit partnership group into two work groups. The contract development group was the first that worked with the transportation providers and human service agencies wanting to purchase transportation for their clients. We collected wish lists and resource checklists, got information on who would be willing and want to purchase transportation services from the lead agency, and where current transportation services are being provided, what time they're being provided, and how many vehicles are being used. At our last meeting on February 17th, the committee decided to endorse and recommend that CRIS Rural Transit be the lead agency in providing this service. The public education group has did the survey analysis and also developed a flyer and FAQs, which are some of the handouts that you have today, and talked about county characteristics and transportation myths to educate the public on what rural public transportation actually is. Some information about CRIS Rural Transit, and part of the reason why the contract development group chose them is they have a very strong background in providing public transportation. They've been doing that for over 20 years in Vermilion County. They provided senior transportation for 39 years and have been doing Danville Mass Transit's paratransit service for over 20 years. They've been providing actual transportation in Champaign County. They did the JARC service from 2004 to 2007. And are now providing contractual service to nursing homes and also for people in Rantoul to go to the VA in Danville. They also, this past year, have established an office in Rantoul. Our next step is we will be going to the township and village board meetings to share the information of the surveys that we found, to share that with them. We have already been scheduled on the agendas for Homer, St. Joe, and Rantoul, and we will be looking to schedule meetings in these other locations that we had a good response and have identified needs for. Does anyone have any questions? Mr. Beckett.
The survey instrument that you use, is it something that the group developed itself?
The survey was actually created as part of the primer process. It's the same survey that all of the counties going through the primer process complete.
All right, so the same survey that was done in Champaign County was done enough in all those counties that have this.
In all the other counties, correct.
Correct. And so is the survey a random survey? I mean, how did the respondents get the survey to answer?
The surveys were sent out. We did distribute them through human service agencies. We also distributed them to all county employees. We distributed them to the county board members. We distributed them to village representatives. We set them up at the Homer Crazy Day Festival, the Sweet Corn Festival. So we tried to get the surveys out to as many of the community places as we could. And agency surveys, we sent those to all the human service agencies that we were aware of, too, that interacted with individuals.
Well, I'm sure the student scientists are totally and every survey that's worth its salt is supposed to have margin of error. Do you have a margin of error on this? Do you have a reliability factor?
No, we didn't do that because we spent a year collecting surveys and distributing surveys that we just collected the data and we discarded those surveys that didn't have appropriate answers kind of that were controversial, but we didn't do the analysis through the margin of error
and
all that.
And survey measures something, but I'll just tell you, without reliability factors and margins of errors, in 1936, the Literary Digest poll predicted that Alf Landon was going to win that election in a landslide. And so.
I understand that. So I understand
that. That's one concern I
yes,
have about that.
Yes, yes. But we have limited resources, too.
I understand. It isn't like we could afford scientific. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I asked this question at that February meeting, and it's sort of follow up to Steve's. When you're looking at the total population area that you survey, do you have a rough number of what that amount of people would be?
It's approximately 2% of the population.
Okay, so the response of the 2% of the total population
of the rural population.
That would be
yes, correct.
And that's the other thing. Steve was saying that because I never, and I'm on the county board unless I overlooked it in my packet, which I could have, but I don't recall seeing that survey. The other thing is, if you're going through all these plans, and I always ask this question because I need to know up front. Mm-hmm. So if this was to come to be, do those townships and towns that are now going to be serviced, does it have a tax liability on them?
No.
It doesn't?
There is no rural public transportation system in the state of Illinois that taxes anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So would that come from Champaign or Van and offset that?
That's right. Mr. Langenheim.
I'd like to comment upon my colleague's classical reference to the Reader Digest poll.
Literary Digest.
Well, they're similar. Literary Digest have an immaculate record of predicting presidential winners up through the Hoover-Roosevelt stuff. They polled their readers by telephone. So it was a selected group of people. It would be comparable to having the teabaggers hold a poll on whether Sarah Palin will win the next election.
Ms. Anderson.
I'd just like to comment that at the beginning of this process, we were all invited to go to those first meetings. I know, Barb, you were there. I attended a few of them, and I do remember that. Well, I was there when they talked about the survey, and we saw the survey, and so someone came from, there, but they had worked on these in other counties and really urged all of us to help get those out to the rural areas. And I think you brought them, I know I saw later that we all got a copy of those
yes.
and were urged.
Yes.
If we knew people in the rural, my district is Champaign, but I did encourage people in St. Joe and some areas where I know people to fill those out, and I think we all had an opportunity to do that.
Mr.
Feynman,
could you?
Yeah, so you said one of the venues that the survey was distributed out was like the Super Bowl Festival?
Yeah.
So, and I'm like Mr. James, maybe my local, I don't know the survey, but is there something on there that designates that you are resident county?
Yes, the survey did ask for you to put your zip code.
Okay.
In there, so that we got an idea of where the surveys were coming from.
Okay.
Mr. Richards.
Funding for this completely coming from IDOT.
The fund. This is not IDOT funding. It is federal transportation funding
mm-hmm.
that passes through IDOT as a pass-through agency, since it is a smaller urbanized area. We do not get direct funding from the federal government. It is a pass-through funding. There is funding that can be used towards that as local match, potentially in the future, that is state transportation funding.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 62 other federal funding streams that can be used for local match to that federal 5311 transportation.
Is there a need for local match?
Yes. Operation is a 50-50 match, and other planning and administrative and capital costs are 80-20.
Mr. Schrader and then Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I want to thank you both for your presentation. And we get a lot of information on the board, and I appreciate your presentation on the slide that maybe I overlooked it, but I don't remember seeing that. And you move through the slides really fast. Is there a way I can get a hard copy of that
Yes, anyone that was, I will make sure that this is available for you guys to see. If any of the survey information that you guys wish to see, I will make available.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Nicole.
Yes.
You're saying here that it's no local tax money.
It's a local match. And you do have to require a local match, but it shows that there is an investment from the local area. However, it does not state that it has to come from tax funding. And like I stated before, that there is no state, no county in the state that uses tax dollars. Other counties, what they do is, for example, the Rural Vita program that operates transportation for seniors in this county has a grant through the Area Agency on Aging, which they can then in turn use to provide, use this contract with the transportation service and provide that money to them, as and they can use that towards their local match.
Mr. Rudo?
Is there an end user fee?
There will be a fair that will be established by the contract development group. Based on the survey results, people said they were willing to pay $2 or $3 for a one-way trip within the county.
Mr. O'Connor?
I don't know whether I said $2 or $3, but I remember returning the survey with a whole bunch of footnotes, and part of it did involve my willingness to pay if needed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably only a few years away from the Secretary of State confiscating my rights.
Well, I guess I'd just like to comment. I probably was particularly interested serving on the mental health board. And some other things I do in the community. It doesn't seem that there is a social service agency that provides some kind of program that, when you look at some of the difficulties of transportation, it always comes up. I think every agency can indicate that they have needs. And it's not just people that. That we don't have access to a car. There are lots of seniors that I have friends that live in Vancouver who can afford to pay somebody to take them, but it's not always easy. And it's not always easy to make the appointments at the time that we have done that can take you. So they're very dependent on some of the services, and the service that does come out of the RPC program.
Mr. O'Connor.
A user fee, I believe, would be much preferable to having to sell your house out in the country and move to a dinky apartment next to Marketplace, if that was the only alternative.
Any further else?
Right on. Well, we'll make sure that you receive a copy of the presentation. And if you have any questions, we have the answer from the surveys, because we received a lot of comments on the surveys, and we tabulated all the data, then we can make that available to you. And we'll be going to the village board in the next month. Then hopefully we'll get the support that we need to go further with this process. Thank you.
January 9th.
We had a total of 21 residents and agencies provide just around 90 comments about the plan, ranging from requests for changes to the document to opinions about the document or opinions about certain pieces of policies. So I tried to divide the comments up into three parts, where the first one is a very concise summary statement, short and sweet, about the gist of the comment. The second set was to paraphrase with a longer statement about the comments, and then the third section is actually the full comments as we receive them, so that you can get a full picture of, you know, the context and content of what our residents were trying to say about the plan. So staff has tried to come up with some recommendations for finalizing the plan based on what the public has said. So we're here with you tonight first to talk about the public comments, just to get your ideas about what, if anything, you would like to talk about regarding the comments, and then after that we have another item that goes through our recommendations for the LRP before it ideally goes to the county board for adoption.
Yeah. So just help me understand what we're doing here. We're going to talk about the public comments, and then RPC has some suggestions, the staff has some suggestions on how to incorporate some of those comments.
Yes, that is correct. If you have any questions or comments about the other people's comments, then we can talk about that now. And after that, we have about 7 specific recommendations to make changes to the draft document.
I guess I'd be interested in hearing, because I've read through all the public comments, I'd be interested, and I have, you know, a couple that I thought were really interesting, but I'd rather hear what you pulled out of that. Start there, what other folks have to say.
Since we delivered this memo to you, our staff has gone back and tried to divide these comments into, like I said, the 7 recommendations that we already came up with. And then we went back into the comments and tried to figure out what comments are asking for very specific recommendations about the plan in terms of changes to wording or mistakes that they might have found that we should correct. And then there's the rest of the comments that are like, it was hard to read, where we really can't do a whole lot about changing this document we've been working on for 30 months, and so we're not ignoring them, but it's not something we can act upon at this point. So to go back to the first 7 recommendations we have, the first one, it's on the second page of the memo that was delivered to you on February 18th, the back page of the cover memo. Page numbering will be resolved. Right now we have 4 different sections of the plan, basically, and page numbering does replicate amongst the sections, so we want to resolve that somehow so that people can refer to specific pages without questioning what section they're in. The second one is on the existing conditions section, figure 9.5, which is just after page 9.10. We had a comment that the railroad tracks between Allerton through Broadlands and Globe Rolls have been abandoned, so we need to change the designation of those railroad tracks to correct that information. The third comment is that existing conditions chapter 8, they'd like to see that the Shortline Rail Prairie owned by Grand Prairie Friends be included on page 8.4 under other park areas open to public. On existing conditions chapter 10, page 10-31, we'd like to correct the text regarding the Illinois National Areas Inventory, which we misstated as being part of the Critical Trends Assessment Program, which it was not, according to a reliable source. So we also have the Land Use Management Areas Map, which is in the Future Land Use section. This was a comment from the City of Champaign, where we just need to correct what they believe to be a sewable area in the next 5 years to basically add it into what we consider an urban designation rather than an unincorporated designation within how our policies are worded for that area. And we've already agreed with the City of Champaign to do that. The sixth comment is that future land use page 14, bullet point 4 of the LRMP edition of suited overall, definition of suited overall,
states that necessary infrastructure is not in place and the word not should be removed. And the seventh comment is that on the implementation strategy, page 21, we need to correct policy 5.1.9 text to be consistent with the text of policy 5.1.9 that appears in both of the different columns. Just we missed reflecting that correctly in the implementation plan. So those are the seven recommendations that we have that are mostly corrections based. But like I said, there are approximately 30 requests that we took out of the comments that are for requesting specific changes to wording or things on the maps that actually we don't recommend any of them because of what has happened in terms of conversations during the steering committee meetings or facts that we know about things or things that we've done over the last 30 months. So that's where we're at with the comments in terms of stuff.
Over and over again at the public hearings, which, by the way, were held out in the county where these public hearings should have been held on this land use plan, out in the county, in the areas where these people live, because that's who's affected by it. The people ask over and over, when you write something, make it so it's easily understandable. We did not do that for some of us folks. And I was disappointed in that. It's pretty cumbersome and pretty hard to go through that document that you presented with us and come to some real solid conclusions. I don't want this to be misinterpreted, just to all follow the seat, but I didn't find a lot of it offensive, that I could understand. But I think that we need to do a better job, if you're going to present this to the public, to make sure the public understands it, and you have admitted that they said it was hard to read. Well, why would you give a kid a book that he can't read, or an adult a book that he can't read? And then wanting to make a decision on it. That makes sense to me.
Mr. Nino?
Yes, in the discussion we talked about responsible parties for the action items before, and I was personally sure that there would be county board involvement along with the planners coming out of the program. I didn't see that in the revised version. Am I missing something?
Do you have specific statements you're referring to?
I think we talked about having involvement by county board committees or involvement through the county board in the action items rather than just the planner from our RPC. And I know that RPC is receiving a salary. How much salaries are going to be utilized for this?
The county planning contract yearly at this point is around $76,000, and we anticipate a little over half of that going toward implementation of the LRMP this year.
Right. So we're going to spend $76,000 of county money to ask somebody else to do some things that we should really be directly involved in. That's my opinion.
That is absolutely correct, and that is exactly what we're thinking as well. Now,
I don't see it. Where it says responsible party, it says, in most cases, it says planner.
Yes, that is correct. But the planner cannot act without a work plan that must be approved by the committee and the whole county board. The actual action items are going to be determined and implemented in any 1 year must go through ELUC to be approved. And so the inclusion of the county board in this implementation plan is inherent in every single one of these.
Inherent after the fact.
generic after the planner has drawn it up and submits it. Correct?
The planner must come through ELOC, and so we can set up prioritization, but that would not be done without certain county board members, such as Barb Wysocki, who has been heading up this process the whole time, and others, if that's what the county board decided they want to do.
And the other thing is, to try to help explain this, before RPC staff would do anything in a given year, they would come to you seeking direction, as they've come to you tonight seeking direction on some text amendments that I would like to run. They'll come to you, get your approval before they do anything, and then once they have your approval, do the work.
And actually, this has been the practice, at least in my tenure on EMOC. One of the first items of business in this last calendar year was to approve the work plan for Susan Monty, who is the county's planner in RPC. And we have done that very consistently for many years.
Individual presenting tonight.
Looking at me or are you looking at Susan?
Oh. All I can say is that while I don't recall the exact wording of what was stated and potentially agreed upon in the previous meeting, this is the way that this has always worked. We're not going to go and try to decide what your priorities are for you. We are going to come to you with what the action tasks outlined here in terms of a very generalized time frame where the immediate ones would be the most prioritized, and you would determine which of the immediate items should be done first.
Mr. Smoker.
I'd like to ask, of all the comments, it was the comments from the folks at the Ferry River Network that led to a very concrete suggestion. And so there's just a couple of them I just like to ask you about it and see if you think that some of those are incorporated in other places or what your responses are to them. For those of you who thought you had been involved in this for a long time, reading these and then not really having the history of the discussion, it's hard to say. It's hard for me to determine how much they're in there. One that strikes me as not being in there at all, though, is the suggestion that they have for a policy 8111 about public hearings and the construction of an expanded viewer lagoon as proposed under the Livestock Management Facilities Act. So that one struck me as something very unique. I'd never heard of that before. I went and did a little research on it. And I was wondering if this was anything that was ever discussed or if you all thought about it since then.
We thought of manure in other ways, but not for this particular way. The steering committee did not discuss this in particular, but staff has looked into this request and has researched that the Illinois Department of Agriculture is using control of this kind of concept, and there would be a public meeting held depending on whether the project type qualifies according to the Illinois Department of Agriculture. And so they would notify the county board if that kind of training needs to take place.
My understanding is that this suggestion is, so my understanding is the process is this, that you apply for one of these lagoons or, you apply for one of them and then automatically the county is notified that the state will come to hold a public hearing if the county would like that to happen. And so I think the idea here would be sort of making it a policy for Camden County to always accept and always have conditions. And they have to be, it has to meet certain conditions.
I think what you're referring to is it requires 75 registered voters to sign on for the county board to hold that hearing.
No, actually, the county can just do it on its own, is my understanding. But the public can petition for those meetings. But what I was suggesting is that in order for the notice to even go out, the facility that's proposed has to house 1,000 or more animal units, or it has to use an earthen room to handle animal units. So if it meets those two criteria, then the state automatically notifies the county. So this would just be a way to say that as a policy, we would accept the state's offer to hold a public meeting, as opposed to having to go through a process of getting 75.
One perspective on this is that this is something that's going to fall under zoning discretion, and so that it's in one context beyond the scope of this LRMP because it's falling under the regulatory side, whereas the LRMP is just a guide. That particular act is falling under the regulatory zoning side, which would go along with any change to the zoning ordinance. But we do have a draft statement of a policy, if the board here would like to have it included in the LRMP, that goes along with what you were just talking about, and that would read something like, upon notification by the Illinois Department of Agriculture regarding the filing of a notice of intent to construct a new livestock management or waste handling facility that will either house 1,000 or more animal units or use an earthen lagoon to handle animal waste, the county will automatically request that a public informational meeting be held. And this would be most appropriate under Objective 2.2. So if the group would like to add that to draft LRMP as part of the final document, we can do that.
So this would be inserted in the implementation part or in not?
It would go under the goals and objectives under Objective 2.2, and that would automatically become an implementation strategy action item as well, because everything that's in the goals and objectives and policies has an action item related to it.
So it would be under information share?
Yes.
Mr. O'Connor?
I'm not sure I'm hearing everything right, but it sounds to me like this is tonight my last chance to review this before adoption by the county board. I'm frightened by that word adoption. That sounds pretty presumptive to me. I'd rather think that we're here to review it prior to presentation to the full board for a vote.
Mr. Jay?
On another issue, did you happen to get any comments on your animal services?
Ambulance
services?
No, we do not.
These are not accurate. They really need to be gone over. There's ALS service out in town, which is the same kind of level of service as good checking. And this doesn't allude to that. In fact, it's indicating that this is the case.
Okay,
so that needs to be addressed.
It could be that some, existing conditions reports are finalized in 2000, which means that we were using 2007 data and earlier. Absolutely, there are things that could use updating, but at the same time, it's a question of whether the county board is willing to undergo the expense of us going back through the 13 chapters of the existing condition report to update all those items now.
Okay, but if you can't do that, then you don't strike it out, which should be presented.
Well, it is accurate as of the moment that we collected it. At the moment we collected it,
well,
that
was not accurate. At the moment you collected it.
Point of order. We'll be talking over each other.
Any other comments?
Does this document compel us in any way to take any specific action?
This document asks the county board.
If we pass this,
would restrict our options on specific cases in the hereafter.
Not until a zoning ordinance change is approved by the Zoning Board of Appeals and the County Board. But this is just a guiding document.
It's a statement, it's not a set of rules.
That is correct.
Mr. Richards.
Madam Chair, how many votes does this take? 18 or a simple majority?
Simple majority. Ms. Anderson.
I think I remember hearing numerous times when we were trying to work on updating our zoning ordinance that you called the county board and said, we're doing this backwards. We should be doing the comprehensive plan. And I think ever since I've been on the board, I've heard that from time to time. And now it sounds like we're trying to do this process of doing, working toward the comprehensive plan. And it sounds like I'm questioning why, but am I wrong? Others heard that too. I remember particularly that Simon was on the board. She was not on the board, but she would come to the meetings urging us to get a comprehensive plan. So I think we should keep that in mind.
Mr. Scott?
I want to go back to the Perry River. The letter from Stacey James and just ask about just two other things. One is a recommendation to add to policy 846, and this discusses keeping in mind downstream land. And I'm wondering if there was, if there would be. If any thought has been given to that sort of question, there is sort of a legitimate reason for objection to that kind of thing.
I can speak to the fact that the steering committee went through a considerable amount of discussion about the wording of things related to drainage districts. It was a hot topic, and they presented a certain set of policies to ELUC. And ELUC came up with policy 8.4.6 and approved it in its current form, which did not include anything about downstream drainage patterns. So we left it with what you left desired.
What about, I guess the question more goes to, what about setting this aside as a, you know, as an 8.4.7, as an independent thing? I'm trying to understand if this, putting something like this in the document, what are the implications of that?
From the conversations that were had at the steering committee and then at ELOC, it goes beyond. So the current form of 8.4.6 is the county recognizes the importance of the drainage districts and the operation and maintenance of drainage. That in itself is the word for drainage coming out of the LRMP. Adding the and encourages the adoption of maintenance practices that will protect downstream drainage patterns, minimize impact on adjacent downstream properties would be an additional that we viewed as something beyond what ELUC had came back and told us they desired. So that's why we're not recommending that adoption.
Maybe Ms. Masaku, can you comment on that? Would you find that objectionable, that kind of language? Is that a problem for the drainage districts to have that kind of consideration suggested to them?
I really don't know the collective thinking of the drainage district commissioners. It would probably be perhaps a good idea to run the idea by them before we did anything definitive.
Then I want to ask one final question on this. This combines several of the comments here. And there's several comments about expanding or encouraging the use of on-site stormwater infiltration, pervious surfaces, preserving riparian stretches and wetlands, all in the name of groundwater recharge. And my sense is that's in there to some extent, but that the suggestions here are probably a little more expansive. Is that a correct characterization, or do you feel like some of those suggestions have already been captured in the last?
It is my opinion that the document captures generalities about aquifer recharge, and that distinct methods that can be used, such as what the farmers are suggesting, will come about through changes to the zoning ordinance once thorough research has been done about what would be most beneficial for Champaign County.
So these really should be brought up as we go through and change the ordinances. These are sort of that level.
Yes.
I just got to observe, if you're having as much difficulty as I am with some of this, interpreting what this means, when it comes time to write the zoning ordinance, take that times 10. That's the complication that I have. The will to do something, or the practicality of trying to put into a policy, in that case, a zoning ordinance to enact something, how difficult it would be. I mean, there's so much in here. It's so, I think, personally, so far-reaching that no way I can ever support it. I think that's why people are almost speechless. There's so much in there. I think to honestly try to absorb it, and I've read a great deal of it, there's so much there. I don't think it's feasible. I could vote on it. I couldn't encourage it.
Mr. Smoker.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here tonight. I've been given versions of this document for months and months. There have been lots of public meetings about it. This committee's been together for an incredibly long time. I guess if there's something that's not being said, is it really just the size of the document? I'm missing something. I mean, I know I got this document a month ago, but I got another version of it 3 months ago. And so, I'm not sure if people's hesitancy is coming from something that they're not articulating, but I would encourage them to say, if I'm missing something, is it really just that you didn't have time to read it, or that the charts are difficult to understand?
Mr. O'Connor.
From my standpoint, there's too many deal breakers in it. The one on 40 just for openers. There's a lot of stuff in there that just scares me and Paul Revere to death.
Mr. James.
I sort of looked through it, but I'm like Mr. Jay. It's not like the tax forms. It's just overwhelming at times.
Mr. Glenn.
I just want to echo what Mr. Smith said.
Mr.
McGinty. I think the challenge with this is that it is not meant to be simple. It's hard to be simple in Champaign County with the sort of land that we deal with. We have, when I first got on this board, ELUC was very complicated to me when I served on it because of the distinct difference in opinions between developers, farmers who have the desire to use their land to hand down to others or to use it for their own retirement by splitting it into subdivisions. You have urban interests. This is not easy. This is also similar to any other large document. Let's say the budget. How many of us agree with 100% of the items that are in the budget? Well, I don't think I ever have, but I've always supported the budget because in all, it is what's good for moving forward in this county. Same thing with this. We spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort on big, small, all. I always saw that as the first logical step to reaching what we needed to have in this county, which is a comprehensive plan, which we do not have. This plan is the next logical step before modifying in a useful, constructive way the zoning ordinance, which is an entire can of worms where we need this document to guide that. I think anyone who has one issue that is a deal stopper is being short-sighted to what is needed in the, as a whole in this county. This is not easy. This is not easy reading. If it was, I'd be worried. But we're not other counties where we are all agricultural or all urban. We have a very distinct mix here, and if you throw the university into that, and you throw the amount of development, the amount of sprawl, and the amount of other things into that, that makes this difficult. So, I mean, I encourage us to look at this as a whole next step that is not absolutely binding, because it's a zoning ordinance that's going to guide us and really enact change. That is not going to be easy. That is very true. And ultimately, we need a comprehensive plan. This is the next logical step to that. Thankfully, we need a simple majority here, but even that appears to be difficult. Please keep in mind that this is very similar to a complicated budget with all of the different issues. If you can support the majority of it, I think that that's what's important to keep in mind here.
Mr.
Langenman?
I would sort of like to agree with what Mr. McKinney just had to say. I went to some of the meetings of that committee that was putting this stuff together, and they were not always really sure exactly what they were doing. That is the difference between setting up a plan or an idea or an aim and actually setting up an ordinance or a rule. Insofar as ordinances and rules leaked into this document, it's probably marred. It's very complex. It covers everything. There are two ways of covering everything. One is to go into hopeless detail, and the other is to go into broad generalities. And actually, the suggestion that there should be an executive summary might help the problem that's facing us right now, because you're not going to comprehend this in any short period of time, and I would almost be willing to guarantee that no single member of that committee understands everything that's in it.
Mr. Ernst?
When I first came on the board a year and a half ago, I took the time to sit in on every single meeting of the steering committee. Some of those members are here today. They worked very hard on this project, very diligent. And if you go back to the sort of the beginnings, this document that you see now is the culmination of almost 2 years of work. And had you sat in on some of these meetings and seen, in fact, the RPC has given us updates on each and every goal and each and every objective that was reached over a period of time when it was a much smaller document. Now, if we break it down into parts, when we go back to the beginning, you can see how this all developed. From each goal, within each goal, there was a certain amount of objectives, and those were delineated as guidelines for the county. It's not in stone, it's not in concrete, that can be changed. The key here was, as we watched it grow, I saw that it was building a good guideline for the future, particularly in having a document that would help us in securing grants, in securing federal and state grants for our programs here in Champaign County. It's part of something that actually needs to happen. Now, how we go about passing it is one thing, but if we look back over the increments of the time that this was done, you can take it in smaller pieces. Don't take it as a 465-page document now. If you go back over 2 years, you see it little by little grow. And if you go back and look at those individual goals and individual objectives, you see it with the best of 18 people, a diverse group of people on the steering committee that did a pretty darn good job, in my estimation, of putting together a program that will benefit our county over a long period of time. And so, don't take it now and say it's confusing now. It's not confusing to me because I watched it grow from small increments into this document. So at every one of those steering committees, there were public participation. There was an open meeting for everyone to see how this evolved and developed. And I don't know of any
of a document that we've had so much public opportunity to speak to over a period of 2.5 years. So we can't just say let's dump this thing because of an individual item in there. You know, I can't vote for it because it's a 1 for 40. We're talking about a document that will show us the way for guidelines to the future here. So let's not be petty about this thing. Let's look at it as its entirety, and we need to make changes, we can make changes. We can't just dump the whole thing because there's one or two items or three items in it that says you don't agree with them.
There are several others who want to speak, but I do want to add to Mr. Kurtz's comments that some of you may not realize that when the steering committee was first conceived at the old 9-person ELOC meeting some 2 or 3 years ago, the stipulation was that every goal, policy, and objective had to have a 75% vote of support of those at the meeting and voting. That is not, we know that. It's not always easy to obtain. It was not easy to obtain at their meetings as well. And a lot of what I'm hearing about wordsmithing, concepts are too broad, concepts are too focused, concepts are this, that, and the other thing, is because these 18 people took a lot of time to deal with the words in order to encourage that majority to be reached. And I think they were really outstanding in that regard, because that meant they really had to interact with each other and really get to the heart of why this word was so bothersome, or why this adjective didn't quite say what it needed to be said. And I think I think the volume speaks wonders of their work. Let's go back to Mr. O'Connor and then go over to the side.
All I want to say is I don't think comparing this to the budget is a fair comparison. We have to have a budget in order to function. And I'm not sure we couldn't limp along somehow without this.
Mr. Gladden.
Okay. So I know Mr. Kurtz was using the term guidelines, but thinking back to the conversation I had with Mr. Paul, these aren't hard and fast rules, if I understand, but these are just guidelines. And apparently we're stumped even with guidelines. But I was on ELOC when this was first conceived, and I saw how this committee was formed, and the efforts and the thought that went into forming it, into the representation that was going to be on this ballroom committee. And the effort over the last 2 or 3 years that has gone into this, and the time, and the thought, and care, and the openness, I believe, of this process, it was there for us to take advantage of if we chose so to do. Open meetings, there were public participation, there were special sessions of the county board, the presentation was given on, there was input that was asked for from the public, input that was asked for from the board members. And I actually do think Mr. McGinty's comparison to the budget is correct, and that, I'll be honest, I always say we find the budget a complicated document to go through. And I'm sure there are other people on this board that think the same way. And we ask a few questions, and then we're like, then we vote. Now this comes along, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, hold on. That's yeah. And I'm like Mr. Smucker, I don't know what's going on. I have my suspicions, but this is not a perfect document. I don't necessarily agree with every single thing in it, but people who all waited for perfection, people who waited a very long time. And this is just a document. This is just a guideline document. I support it.
Mr. Langenhorn and Mr. Moore.
I just wanted to reiterate that this is not a set of rules, it's a set of aims. And much of what we're debating here is whether or not some particular thing should or should not be done. There's nothing that the county board should not be able to consider that bears in any way upon the operation of this county. Now, another matter which disturbed me at the time and still disturbs me, and that is this board, this committee, was purposely slanted to serve the rural population. The rural population is what? 1/4 of the population of the county. So the majority of the people in this county were not really very well represented in the proceedings of this board by the manner in which it was put together. It would have been inconvenient, would cause a lot more sound and fury if representation had been done a little more equitably in terms of population and attitude. But that comment, I'm still going to vote for this because I'm counting on the fact that it's not going to tie my hands when any particular issue comes before this board. I can argue for or against it and not have somebody say, but it says in this document that you can't do that. If I said that if that's true, I wouldn't want to vote for this. I don't want to preclude the ability of prevent the board from having the ability to consider every issue on its merits, on the spot, at the time it's presented.
Mr. Knott?
I guess the only point I see about saying that it doesn't mean that much is 35 years ago, somebody here went to the drive and said, it doesn't mean that much. Well, here we are 35, 40 years later, and it means something because somebody's pointing to a book or pointing to a policy and saying, well, you guys said 40 years ago that that's what you wanted to do. Well, it may not have the effect of law or, you know, in that regards, but some of the things in here, years from now, when we're all, when we're taking off, somebody's going to want to say, that's what you guys said, so that's what you're going to have to do. So I don't think it's exactly fair to say it doesn't matter, because it does. And I don't want to minimize the amount of work and effort went into this, because it's a very thorough document. I mean, it's well documented in itself. I think some of the factors they use, I just happen to disagree with some of what's in it. And it's, I guess what I see is, if this gets passed, which I assume it probably will, then it's the next stage of zoning rewrite, which I was here for the last one to make it through, of how far-reaching that's going to be. And that's, I guess, where I get concerned on part of it, is how much farther will that go. And, you know, being one of those 25% that live out in the county, it's going to affect me personally. It's going to affect a lot of people I represent, a lot of ones that my colleagues and I represent. It's not universal on it. There's some good things in that. I guess I don't want to minimize that. It's not just one thing that I'm, quote, don't like is the reason I can't support it. I just have fear that there's so much there, and I just used the example of Lincoln Drive because that's the latest. Somebody's going to say, you voted for that, so that's what you meant. Our vote does, it does have meaning. I mean, I think if you believe it, you should vote for it, but if you don't, I think now's your time to exercise that. And one last thing, we don't actually have a motion on the floor, so I'm wondering if, you know, if we should do something at some point to initiate so we could actually take action.
Mr. Beckett.
Well, I think to put the motion on the floor, you have to move to the next agenda item, and we sort of blurred into the next agenda item by this discussion. So if you'll let me, I'll put the motion on the floor.
I'll
move approval to that at the top. Move approval of the LMRP.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Langenberg. Go ahead.
You know, the problem is that we've got 27 clocks here. They're old-fashioned clocks, and we're trying to get them all keep time the same way and to chime at precisely the same time. And the problem is that you wind the chimes to the right, and you wind the time to the left, and it just ain't going to happen. We got different velocities, disagree with Mr. Langenheim in one respect, because I do think it was appropriate that the rural interest be weighted, because probably 80% of the land is involved in this, as opposed to just the population. I think that makes perfect sense to me. But I disagree with my primarily the Republican colleagues who are opposed to this, because I've been on the board going on 10 years, and we have made zero progress in our land use policy. And this is a step, albeit a step that isn't subject to criticism, but it's a step. It's a reasonable step. It's a step we ought to take. Those of you, the naysayers, aren't saying, I move to amend section X and put in X. They're not saying that. They're just saying, I don't like it. Well, my experience has been it's the same people that I've been on the board with for some time now, and they don't like any land use policy, and they never vote for the land use policy, you know, the past one that we brought forward. So I say, vote against it. And I'm hoping that a majority of the board will see the wisdom of moving forward in a reasonable way, and that's exactly what this is.
Thank you.
And then Mr. Carter. I just want to remind everyone here what the premise of this document is about. It's about the preservation of our most just important asset, agriculture of our community, the agriculture of our county. And Mr. Knott, who talks about his constituents who are farmers and who own thousands of acres of property, this document is for their protection, to protect them from urban sprawl that we have now happening and will continue to happen. I sat in on a city council meeting not recently, just a few weeks ago, where they were talking about what their plans were for the future for expanding Champaign. I can only tell you it was immense. They were looking to spread into our best prime farmland by hundreds and hundreds, thousands of acres. And this is a document that, though it's only guidelines, was a premise for protecting our asset, our agriculture, our prime farmland. And I would think that those who represent that area certainly should look at this document in a light that says, how can I improve it, rather than how can I kill it? So that's all I have.
Before I go to Mr. Nudo, I will add just a comment to Mr. Kurtz's comments. Even while this document was out there for public review, I had an official with one of our small local communities who actually claimed to me for the document as it was, because it enabled their city or their village government to say no to another residential development. And the comment I got was, we couldn't do that before because county government is our government and the county wasn't saying anything. So that, at least it empowered one person. Mr. Nudo.
I want to reemphasize the point of responsible party again, because, again, in my mind, if what we're all saying here is factual, that this is a guideline and not going to be gospel, then I see a lot of wasted effort by the planners to put forth these items and present it to us before we say this is a priority or not a priority. Again, on page 7, I look at what was considered to be midterm, and I see it, the first item on midterm, as being a priority. And so I would like to have, the document is a reasonable document. I'm sure what Ms. Wysocki is saying is factual, and I've been to most of the ELEC meetings before presentation tonight. But I just want some assurances that county board and DLAC will have say before the planners start writing up these things so they know what is a priority and in our minds and what is a reach and what is not a reach. And so I don't want to see the planners go and jump ahead and create ordinances and resolutions based on this document, near-term, mid-term, and long-term, without guidance from us first. And that's the only assurance I want. I respect the document, but I haven't heard that yet. What I heard earlier, just prior to me speaking, after Susan said to just to the group, well, we'll bring this to you, and then we'll have final approval. I'd like to see it shared and prior to, before any of these items go forth.
I'm going to let Susan respond, and then I haven't forgotten you, Mr. Carter, so hang tight.
As we know, this is a draft document, and we are perfectly willing to make the revisions that she doesn't make to make this document pass, because we have worked very, very hard, as well as the steering committee and all the other people who put input into this. So what I am suggesting in the case of Mr. Wheeler's request is that staff can absolutely put in a paragraph or two in this section on implementation that stipulates exactly that the county board will be the first to decide what the priorities are before it comes to the planners.
Well, to be brutally frank with you, that's what I asked in the previous meeting, and I was assured by you that was going to be written in. I'll be honest with you, that is what I asked for. Now, maybe I didn't make myself clear, but that's why I'm speaking again to you tonight, because there are things in here that some members object to, and again, you're going to be wasting $76,000 this fiscal year, or whatever the time frame that you're going to be, if you bring forth things that we didn't consider to be a priority, or if we object to. So I think there needs to be straw polls or votes as we go along prior to you writing up ordinances and change. That's what I was asking for, shared responsibility.
And Ms. Chamberlain, that is doable?
Yes, of course. It's your document.
And the fact that ELOC will continue, well, at least in the foreseeable future, to be meeting as a committee of the whole, obviously the accountability is to 27 people, not just the standard nine.
One more thing, that meter runs. I mean, this $76,000 that we're spending now is going to continue running. So I don't want to use it in a mismanaged way. That's my point. That if you start off on near term, and some people feel that mid term items are more important, or the near term items aren't important at all, I don't want to see time spent because it's going to go on next year and the next year. And if you're not pointed out after we switch out, and there's other people in our seats.
Mr. Carter.
I would like to vote in, but I think we owe our other board members a chance. We have never been in a whole board session find out what the other guy didn't want. So I hate to vote on it, and then they say, well, we didn't have a chance to have our say or have our vote, but I think we should have a special meeting. Let them bring out these issues that they think is not right for them. I know it's been going on, but you see, I feel better if you can't tell me where you didn't give me the chance. If you have your chance, then you can't tell me that.
Right. And the process would be is that the official vote, Mr. Carter, would be taken at a regular county board meeting, not a committee of the whole.
Say that again, ma'am.
The official vote on this issue or most issues is taken at the full county board meeting, not a committee meeting such as tonight.
So, whatever. If we vote on tonight, what would that say?
It means we would pass it along to the full county board.
You go to the county board.
Right. Right.
Well, wait, now, if I'm understanding language, if you do that,
the essay is done. The next time you vote it in.
No.
Oh,
never
happened. Let them argue. I think we should let them have a say.
Yeah, and if that's what this group wants to do, fine. If there's another route, fine. But a motion has now been made and seconded, so pretty soon we're going to take a vote.
We still have time for them to examine this before the board meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll get back to you guys.
I just wish that the folks that have specific objections, like, you know, Mr. Hugo is concrete. I think it's very clear what he wants staff to do. And I think that's an amendment that could be brought to the table, even at the full county board. The other criticisms are general, and they're so general they're really not much benefit in reframing the document. Or they're like Mr. J, and quite frankly, he's opposed to it. That's okay. That's okay, but then vote against it. Let's do something.
Okay. We've now had two or three requests to call the question.
How many votes is okay?
14.
Oh, okay. The 9 is
40.
We have how many people
here? 12.
Roll call.
Wait, I'm counting. 17.
Well, you have to vote to see whether or not the body wants to call the question.
We have 21.
21
people. Sorry, I forgot your name.
Show of hands to call the question.
All right, those in favor calling the question, raise your hands.
The question takes two-thirds, 60% or something.
Point of order. Point of order. Personally, they don't call the question, but there's some of us that hadn't had a chance to express their views on anything tonight. These are meetings to do that. This is a committee of the whole, not a county board meeting. These are expressly for doing this. And go ahead and shut off debate.
No.
We've had this before.
No, I'm not shutting off debate. I'm just saying the question has been called. The next order is to vote on calling the question.
I guess my concern is if there are board members that you haven't called upon, it's too early.
We had our hands up.
Okay, where did we lay off? Calm down. Who else wanted to speak? Scared them off. Anderson,
start. I just wanted to briefly respond to this committee and Eva in the Virginia Senate review, and we were presented with the action items and their explanation of the couldn't do all the things that couldn't do all these at once. And so the personal priorities made it. But these are precise too. So I haven't given for 6 years the process has always been to bring that to me in a different direction. Sure. And I don't know.
Mr. James.
Well, up on Al's comments, that was some of my concern too, that for lack of a better term, a disclaimer in front of that, but stating that this is just a tool to use and guidelines. I've been on this committee for just 4 or 6 years, and I do. I appreciate all the work because none of us have all the answers. But what I look at is every time an issue like this comes up or anything else that we dealt with, once that book is there, or once that plan is there, or, you know, we start with the nursing home, courthouse, I just go down the list, it's like, well, it was voted on, you had your chance to say something, but you didn't say anything, and now we've passed this, let's move on. And I grant it, there's been a lot said about this, but the way it's structured and the way it's worded, it does give me pause for thought to think that this is a document that once we're gone, those, and there's going to be several leaders, Barb's going, Steve's going, Mr. Gladney, who has a lot of common sense, is going, but it worries me that this will be the document everybody's going to, so disclaimer that Al is talking about, Some of that other stuff, I'm with you. It's not stone. We can sit here and beat it up every night like we do on other issues. But having that disclaimer so I can look at that and Mr. Beckett's gone and I can say, look, here was the intention. It's a guideline. It's not something we have to follow. But we can redraft an ordinance or do something. But that book scares me a little bit. And by no means have I read it all. So I'm just speaking from what I have seen.
Mr. Schrader.
Thank you.
Where to start?
Back in 89, when I was appointed to ZBA, Plain Zone Department was two people, Jimmy Yett and Ty Clapper. And Ty Clapper was a dog catcher. And 10 years on ZBA and 6 years on ELUC. And where 10 years ago, or 1989, we had a policy and goals book that was written, I believe, in 75. It needed update. We went through big, small, law, and we've come to this point. And for years, I've been an advocate for a comprehensive land use plan. But it takes a lot of cooperation. Not only cooperation outside the city limits of any municipality in the county, but inside. It needs vision. It needs not only vision, but it needs support. And it needs some commonality. You can look at counties in the state of 102 counties in Illinois, and those that have comp plans have that. It was a mission to try and do this, to start with the LRMP, to start that process, along with Big Small Law, to bring people together. And I attended one of the Big Small Laws in Toledo. I think a lot of the board members at that time during Big Small Law did their appropriate sites and gave their input. To the LRMP, there's one thing that I wanted out of this document, and that was a book that gave a lot of the geographic and physical information about the county compiled into a book like this, and it succeeded, and I'm happy to have it. It's an excellent resource for anyone in the county. I know when Mr. Gonzalez got on the board, our latest member, I asked the staff to give him the information because we got it with the minutes of the steering committee meetings, and we pieced it together, three-ring binder and everything, and he was amazed, like I was, at a lot of the information. It's great stuff, and it's never been compiled. It's been out there, but it's never been compiled like this. And I want to compliment definitely the staff of RPC and the staff of Planning and Zoning and the steering committee for compiling this information. It's great. It's wonderful. The steering committee meetings and the hearings of the steering committee, I didn't attend every one of them, but I attended quite a few, actually. And the next thing I'm going to get to the LRMP is goals and policy. Now, I'm all for changing, like I said, from 75, updating our goals and policy. I think it's important. And I think people's views and ideas have changed somewhat, but not totally. The county hasn't changed exactly that much. I haven't. But what I have an issue with is a lot of it was written, as Mr. Langenheim stated, as policy. Or not policy, excuse me, as an ordinance. A lot of it was written like an ordinance. Now, I remember being at one steering committee meeting when that idea was brought up, and one of the steering committee members said, yes, we want to be clear to the elected what we want. We don't want to be blasé or fuzzy on what we decide. We want them to know exactly what we want. So we want to write it a certain way. And that's fine. And no one objected to that statement. And that was made. And that's fine. But I think, and I look for more of a broader view of things instead of a lot of this, like I said, was written like an ordinance. And the subject was brought up about, and I'm not going to get into debating individual policy here tonight. I know it was brought up about section 8.4.6, I believe. Yeah, 8.4.6. I mean, if somebody wants to talk to me about some of that, some of what the Prairie Rivers would like to do, certain aspects of this, I'd be happy to debate or talk to, and not take the time up at this particular time of the meeting. But there's been, and a lot of this was done, what was discussed earlier by a lot of us, with the goals and policies, a lot of these were brought up, of course, they were all brought up in front of ELA, back when we were 9 members, back when we were a committee, not a committee of the whole. And so there were issues that were brought up that were voted on and thought to be laid by, but to come back only and change because of a majority rule. And that's fine. That's why you have majorities to rule that way. So it's not single issues. It's a few issues. And I can't see the reason of bringing them up again, only to be slapped down again as a minority party. I think it's fruitless. We had the discussion as 9-member board, and it was changed or reversed or gone a certain way. So I'm not going to support this only because of the ideas of what the goals and policies and how they were written. I expected more of a broader range of things, not so much, and not all of them are written like an ordinance, or ordinance-written language, to be more precise. But I expected more of a broader scope. Kind of the same view in 1975, thereabouts. That and the issue of there were some policy issues, some goals that were needed to change, weren't changed, or that were changed, agreed upon, and in a fashion of middle ground, and then brought back and changed again. So I'm sorry that this got into a urban versus rural thing, because living in a rural area, a lot of this affects the rural area, period. The majority of it affects the rural area, especially if you want to take out 8.4.6. I mean, last spring, 4-inch rain in southwest Champaign, and none where I live, basically brought the Kaskaskia out of its banks and in the fields. So if you want to broaden, if you want to have policy, or if you want to have policy, that's one thing, but if you want to have ordinance language that says, be mindful of the downstream, then I guess we're going to dam up southwest Champaign from letting that water come down and get in my fields. I mean, the ordinance implications of this are, to me, some of this mind-boggling. So it's very much a concern to me, not only as a downstream, someone who lives downstream, but also who lives out in rural areas. So I've said my piece. I thank the chair for allowing that. And
thank you. Anyone else who has not spoken at all to this issue? I'm standing in the end. Mr. Jones.
I have to put my we've heard you plenty of times. I'd like to say I've been in the ELUC meetings when we were smaller, and I've worked on this for at least 2 years now. And I agree with Mr. McGinney and some of the others that I really like to see a comprehensive plan here. But I also agree with Mr. Schrader that I'm very frustrated that specific proposals, like the one for 40, I've been very vocal about that. I oppose that. We had taken that out of the plan. I remember last year Mr. Kirk put it back in on a partisan vote. It was 5-4. I remember I said at the time that I would support the entire plan, and there's no reason to put individual provisions in there when you know that certain people aren't going to be able to support the plan, and then turn around and say, it's ridiculous that you guys want to support the plan. I just don't understand, you know, how we have a need for this plan or a provision like that that doesn't need to be in there, and you stick it in there anyway, knowing that it's going to cause certain people not to vote for it. And again, half the people I represent are rural, and I know there's a lot of opposition to that in the plan. So again, I think we need a comprehensive plan, but again, if, like Mr. Schrader said, changes were made, and that's pretty much good to keep arguing about now, because I know the majority are going to support those changes. But I'm not going to be able to support the plan when we can't have done the right thing.
Anyone else who has not spoken? Okay, last call for seconds. Mr. Nudo.
I understand that from John and Susan that a disclaimer will be placed in, or do I need to do a permanent amendment at this time?
Jerry has no problem with a friendly amendment to that effect.
John, did you have something that you would go to?
Well, if I could, I would just like to point out that on the very first page of the goals, objectives, and policies, the second paragraph from the bottom, the second sentence, is as follows. The goals, objectives, and policies are guiding principles rather than a regulatory document. However, specific intents, language, and terminology are used to provide clarity and guidance for future regulatory changes. Now, I believe that is a disclaimer that this should not be misinterpreted as regulations. But indeed, we could put a disclaimer on the front and say, wait a minute, nothing here requires you to actually do anything. But is this accurate?
No, what I was requesting is that before any ordinances, changes are made, code, that the planners come to the board to ensure that that's a priority that they want done.
No.
That's what I
requested.
Ms. Martin, you need to get to a microphone, Susan. This is Susan Martin, who is the county's planner in RPC.
I think this may already be in the document on page 1 of the implementation strategy. If you look at the last paragraph on that first page, after the first sentence, of that, it goes on to say the text amendment review procedure would be, one, review proposed amendment with ELUC, or the Committee of the Whole now. Two, proceed with text amendment after ELUC approves the general amendment.
That's not what I want.
This is like outlining a procedure. I thought that's what you were talking about.
If I may, I do understand that Mr. Mew is asking for a step prior to this.
That's correct.
Okay, I apologize. I thought
I
said that a month ago, and I said it.
Okay.
I'll accept that as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
And I'd ask that be put in the document. Who's my seconder, Mr. Harris? Mr. President agrees.
Langenheim was second.
I seconded your.
Yes. You agree?
What are we accepting?
We're accepting that they're going to put language in there about a particular process before planning. The county board has to approve planning activity.
Of course.
All right. It's there. It's there.
What is it? Don't we have another motion on the floor right now?
No.
No, we don't. No. Mr. Carter.
Now, Madam Chair, now, is that going to sell all of that?
I have no idea.
We sat up here. See, that's what angered me. We sat up here and analyzed stuff. 10 hours. Well, it's the simple thing to do to get them all in the room to lock them up and get it over with.
I don't think lock them up.
It would take no time to have a special meeting and let the people have their say. And then come back. We set up here now, and when we get done, is that going to be anything? So, is that?
Your point is well taken.
And then, wait a minute, some say, I know what the, I was only lost the year. I know the condition of it, just like when we tried to get health care, but a lot of people didn't want health care. But we finally sent enough specialists out in the county to educate the people we got health care. It's the same here. Let the people tell what they say.
And then we can come back and they can say, well, you didn't give me my opinion. That's all. That's the way I am.
Thank you. Mr. Beck.
Mr. Carter, I'll say it one more time. We've had so many meetings on this. We've had so many public hearings. People have the chance to have their say. Sometimes they say things, sometimes they don't. It's when we come close to passing it, that's when they want to talk. They don't want to talk at the drafting stage. They want to talk at the final stage, and they want to find things wrong, and they find things wrong, and they're entitled to do that. Mr. McGinty and I have for years been talking about the A's. If you have an alcohol regulation or ordinance, and it comes to the board, forget what the committee's done. It gets chewed on, chewed up, and chewed down. If you're dealing with animal regulation, forget what the committee's done. It gets chewed up and chewed down. If you talk about adult entertainment, we haven't had that in a long time. I'm telling you, when that comes to the board, it gets chewed on. And now we've got a fourth one. This is called Anchors. And, you know, we just have differences of philosophy. And let's accept that fact. Let's just accept it.
Now, your question being called.
Please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Mr. Schrader, you okay with that?
Roll call.
Excuse me, I'm
going to
need that microphone.
Roll call. Question.
Yes.
Oh,
on the document.
Move to approve the document for the
board. I've heard something outside my head.
As amended.
With the friendly
amendment.
Second.
Okay.
That's the motion.
Okay.
Yeah. Ammons. Anderson.
Yes.
Beckett.
Yes.
Benzel.
No.
Betts. Carter.
I hate to say this, but I'm voting no.
George's not here. Dennis.
No.
Gladney.
Yes.
James.
No.
Jay.
No.
Jones. Not.
No.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
No.
Nudo.
Yes.
O'Connor.
No.
Richards.
No.
Rosales.
Yes.
Schrader.
No.
Smucker.
Yes.
Wysocki.
Yes.
Can I change my vote now?
I don't know if that's... Can you?
Yeah, can I change my vote now? No. Oh, and
yes. Yeah, if you want to.
Okay.
No, just do it.
Change your vote now.
I'm changing my vote now.
Okay.
I move to table the motion to reconsider. I move to defer the motion to reconsider. Second.
Motion to make to defer the motion to reconsider. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Mm-hmm. item is a request to amend the Champaign County Zoning Ordinance. This is case number 658-18-09. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Motion by Mr. Beckett, second by Mr. Rosales. Discussion. Mr. Hall, you want to comment?
Well, remind the board that pursuant to the comments made by Mr. Schultz, I would be very happy to withdraw Part E of this amendment, and we have included it under one of the proposed text amendments to be discussed later. It's obvious that what is in this amendment is not going to erase arguable points, and that's the whole purpose of doing this amendment. So, but I would like to have some direction from the board on that.
Could you just address the could you explain to me in your mind what that amendment does?
Part B?
Yes.
Part B was intended to clarify that in fact all of the wind farm conditions are standard conditions that are waivable, and it also actually, what it is at heart is really just updating the references in the ordinance, and as it currently is, there are some things that are supposed to be standard conditions and aren't, and this clarifies, I mean, just by reference, everything in the ordinance, I believe, that is a standard condition is clearly stated as such. But nonetheless, there are people who disagree with that. And I talked with the state's attorney about this, and they agree that since there is disagreement, we may as well give it as clearly stated as possible. Did that help you?
Yeah. So my understanding is that Mr. Schultz's interpretation that essentially this makes basically the different standards makes them waivable as soon as by the zoning board is not correct.
Mr. Beckett.
So I'm trying to understand, John. If you withdraw this, how do we bring the concept back in a way that's acceptable?
Well, again, it's just Part B, and in fact, back on page, on page 106, we've got a draft of an actual change that we would propose. Back just on page 109. What it would amount to is instead of just saying where this table of conditions exceed everything in section 5.3, we have to be so clear as to say exceed in either amount or kind.
It's perfectly acceptable to me. I mean, I don't know if you need a motion or a consensus or what to have you withdraw this and deal with it the other way.
Is there a lawsuit pending, an applicable action regarding this RLA?
There's a lawsuit about interpretation of what an agricultural RLA is.
Yeah, that's my question. Is there a lawsuit?
Actually, it's not a lawsuit. It's we're in court trying to get a declaratory judgment. I don't know. If, we're not being sued, but we are in court.
So you are in court?
Yes.
Okay, so is it wiser to wait until that decision comes out before you create something?
This is
Well, this text amendment is not about what is considered agriculture and whether an RLA is considered agriculture or not. They are related to the extent that RLA is, you know, included in each.
Decision won't have any effect on divisions that you're part of.
I don't believe they will, no. You say the court decision. As far as I can say, they won't.
Can I make a motion then that we withdraw Part B, deal with that separately so that we can deal with the RLA question alone?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to withdraw the Part B of zoning case 658-18-09. Discussion.
Can we see this then coming back next month or something like that?
Later on, I ask you for permission to do a new text amendment that would relate to Part B.
So, we're withdrawing D1, right? From the agenda. Correct?
Right.
No.
No.
Part B of D1.
So it's D2.
Is it D2?
No. No, no.
I thought D2 was one that was the action item.
D2 is a separate item. It also is a Part B, but it's a different zoning case. And so this is only D1, and D1 had two parts, and Part B was the part to withdraw.
Thank you. So that's all we're doing is withdrawing Part B of agenda item 1.
Right.
All right.
Okay. We need a vote. All those in favor of the motion to remove Part B out of D1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Okay, next item. This is. Oh, pardon me. Yeah, we need to vote on Part A. I see the motion.
So, second.
Okay. Second. Okay. Is there any discussion on Part A?
Could I ask for a summary from Mr. Hall?
What are you doing?
Okay, Part A. Clarifies references in the ordinance regarding the letter of credit for wind farms to make it very clear that we have one standard for letters of credit in general, and then we have a separate higher standard for wind farm letters of credit. So that when someone comes to the ordinance and reading it new, all those references will, you know, make it as clear as possible. The other part of this, however, changes the existing requirement for a separation from a wind farm in a restricted landing area or a residential airport. The way the ordinance is right now, any RLA or residential airport, whether it existed yesterday, or whether it is created in the future, will benefit from a separation of 3,500 feet, a blanket 3,500 foot separation. The amendment that's before you, first of all, only does the automatic separation for RLAs or residential airports that existed or for which we had a complete application by the time this thing is adopted. Secondly, it goes from a blanket 3,500 feet separation to one based on the height of the wind farm towers, using the same kinds of factors that we used to get the 3,500. And secondly, this goes a little beyond the current ordinance by also protecting the runway approach area. The net effect is, if you're dealing with the typical size wind farm towers, you'll actually end up using less area for this separation, but you end up protecting the approach zone, which we don't currently protect. So it's a much more efficient regulation. However, it will only apply to RLAs and residential airports that exist now, or that which you have a complete application for that when this is adopted. And Mr. Ludo referenced, we do have a pending RLA case. However, we've got a complete application for that RLA. And it would be protected the same as any other existing RLA. So they're related to that estate.
Move approval.
Second. Motion has been made by Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Dennis. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
There was motion on the floor already.
I thought there was.
Yes. There was a motion on the initial motion on the floor by Beckett, seconded by Rosales.
Okay, let's stick with that. Okay, thank you. We had all of the I votes with one exception. Okay. Next item. Item E. D2.
Okay, this is the small wind turbine amendment, and as I pointed out in the memo, there's no real rush for this. The committee could defer this.
Move to defer.
Okay.
Motion's been made by Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Dennis. Any discussion on deferring? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All the same sign. Motion carries. Okay, what's next? E1. The request is to conduct a Champaign County Zone Ordinance Text Amendment clarifying standard conditions and clarifying wind farm shadow footprint requirements. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Kurtz.
Second.
Second by Mr. Beckett. Discussion. Mr. Smucker.
We have an explanation.
This text amendment does two things. Number one, it does Part B from Case 658, which you just approved Part A of, trying to clarify what are standard conditions and what aren't. It also clarifies the wind farm shadow flicker conditions. I look at that as just a housekeeping item, but right now, the current ordinance, you may recall, ELEC changed the shadow flicker requirement back in paragraph 614M, but we forgot to tell the committee there was another part of that at the beginning of paragraph 614, and so this goes back and eliminates that earlier part, because what the committee did with 614M, that earlier part just is clearly not necessary.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. E2, request to conduct a zoning ordinance text amendment to make the ordinance consistent with state law regarding the number of affirmative ZBA votes.
Move approval.
Motion second. By Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Neidenheim. Discussion.
This means 4 out of 7 instead of 5 out of 7 puts us consistent with state law, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. E3, text amendment changing the maximum fence height limits. Need a motion?
So moved.
Second. By Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Gladney. Discussion. Mr. O'Connor.
I'm just curious what brought this up.
For some time, well, in the past couple of years, we've had a few variances where folks needed fence heights higher than 6 feet. And in the process of doing that, we found out that our fence regulations are actually more restrictive than those in the municipalities, which seems a little odd. And so I think we have to, I mean, maybe if the board wants to, we could elevate our fence height limit from 6 feet to 8 feet. It would be consistent with municipal ordinances. It would provide more flexibility for the rural landowners.
Go ahead, Mr. O'Connor.
Is it safe to say then that a 9-foot fence isn't allowable?
Only by variance.
I wonder why.
Who
cares? What if it's 40 feet high? It's my property.
Well, you could, this board could direct me to make this not 8, but 9 or 10 or 12. It's your call.
My call would be not to worry about it.
Mr. Langenheim.
as a planner and not as a, not making any professional plan of, why should there be any limitation on the height of the fence?
We could eliminate our fence height limits. I suspect that text amendment would be protested by municipalities because their concern is fences getting constructed at a very great height, and then when they annex that property, they've got non-conforming fences. But the board could perhaps override those protests and do away with fence height limits. I don't know what the rural residents would think about that. Generally, people are opposed to someone putting up higher than a 6-foot-high fence. Their only opposition is aesthetics, and the ZBA generally doesn't listen to that. But you know, we could run a text amendment to eliminate fence height limits, if that's what you want.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Show of hands. All in favor? Looks like a majority right there. Okay. Now that you're packet in a memo from Mr. Hall. In response to a query from Mr. Nudo that had regarding comparable nuisance enforcement productivity in comparable counties. If you haven't read that yet, you might want to do so.
Move we accept and place on file.
Okay. Motion's been made to place it on file. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Monthly report.
At your table in those conspicuous white paper with black letters was your monthly report. The report basically continues our existing trends of low zoning cases and few permits. Although on enforcement, we had a better month this month than last. We've been given snow days and things like that.
Motion. We set the place on file. Thank you.
Second.
Seconded by Mr.
McGinty. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Carried.
Coming from the chair's report, Mr.
Schrader. Other business you speak right about, I'm sorry. I've been in communicating with Libby Tyler, City of Urbana, and I would ask for her permission that she be included on April's agenda committee of the whole for ELOC to discuss. I'm assuming correct that we are discussing Olympia Drive, will she be included on that particular part of the agenda?
Mm-hmm. On the consent agenda.
Probably. I mean, it seems like everyone else is